My name is Ash, and I am a slave. Close as I can figure it, the year is 1300 AD, and I'm being dragged to my death. It wasn't always like this. I had a real life once. A job.
Hardware, aisle 12. Shop smart, shop S-smart.
I had a wonderful girlfriend, Linda. Together we drove to a small cabin in the mountains. It seems an archaeologist had come to this remote place to translate and study his latest find. Necronomicon Ex Mortis, the Book of the Dead. Found in human flesh and inked in blood, this ancient Sumerian text contained bizarre burial rites, funerary incantations, and demon resurrection passages. It was never meant for the world of the living. The book awoke something dark in the woods. It took Linda. And then it came for me. It got into my hand and it went bad. So I lopped it off at the wrist. But that didn't stop it. It came back. Big time.
Cthulhu, this episode of Destructomundo.
It's on, it's on. There's no sound. Play with the rabbit ears.
It reports incredible as they seem are not results of mass hysteria.
Mass hysteria. Apparently they think we're imagining all this.
Destructomundo.
Witnesses to the effect that people who acted as though they were in a kind of trance were killing and eating their victims prompted authorities to examine the bodies of some of the victims. Medical authorities in Cumberland have concluded that in all cases, the killers are eating the flesh of the people they murdered. Repeating this, ladies and gentlemen, Justice Cumberland of Maryland, civil defense authorities have told you that murder victims have no evidence of having been partially devoured by their murderers.
Dun, dun, dun. Wouldn't be the show without that.
Cue creepy music.
Yeah.
We need to get the theremin out.
We do.
So if you look in, I don't know what story it is, but he gives, you can look it up, and the listeners can look it up, but he gives longitude and latitude coordinates of...
Call of Cthulhu story.
It's the Easter, yes.
Yeah.
Of Cthulhu. Because I went on Google Earth to try to find it, and it's just a spot in the middle of the ocean someplace.
Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here. This is, tonight's show is going to be about the, sort of the culmination, the summary of the Cthulhu mythos.
And how we're all going to die in a horrible death.
How we're all going to die, because this is the last gasp of humanity, everybody. There is no way out of this. No,
if you're
there's
one of
no heroics. Everybody is either one going insane or two being eaten. And everybody's getting eaten. Yeah, or being sacrificed or turning into a monster and then eventually getting sacrificed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or the lucky
or
ones.
Or eaten. Everybody is going to die from this. Nobody gets to live. So.
The lucky ones who get shot through time and space and end up embodied in some alien creature and not knowing what happened.
Oh, yeah. That's the lucky ones.
So you end up like, well, or like a million years in the future as like an insect on the dying earth.
The lucky ones. Well, we can't assume that people have any idea what we're talking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is... It's the... I mean, to put it simply, it's a work of H.P. Lovecraft in the in the 20s of some say horror fiction.
Supernatural horror is what
and
he said.
His referencing of such notorious tomes such as the Necronomicon and also known as the Book of the Dead and made famous by the Evil Dead and Army of Darkness movies.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, basically you had a H.P. Lovecraft American horror writer who based a series of stories around this idea of these ancient, ultra-powerful beings that are were perceived that had come to this planet at various points in the past and had been, and they're referred to in varying degrees as gods, but it's that's only perhaps the way they're interpreted by the humans that they, you know, because of their cosmicness, you know, they're so beyond the simple world here.
Right.
They're timeless. They are cosmic in the true sense of the word cosmic.
Yeah, their machinations are very slow and lumbering and difficult for, like, people to see because they take place over, like, thousands of millennia.
So then there's the term the mythos in the sense that there's a number of them.
Yeah, it's a pantheon.
And they have their own sort of interactions and interrelationships. And there's sort of different, there's the kind of hierarchy to the, you know, and there's some have different origins in different ways. And some are more physical in sense of like an actual being. And then some are more, I guess, supernatural or
preternatural.
Preternatural, right. Supernatural.
So there's some that tend to...
Some are more, you know, but they're all sort of like these things that are just so beyond the comprehension of a simple, physical, mortal human.
Right, that if you see one, there's a pretty good chance you'll just...
But he wrote a thing, so there's a series of stories about, you know, these beings and then other...
And there are various races of servitors.
Yeah, right? And this whole concept of, like, the varying times, varying dimensions, and this kind of alternate, you know, sort of secret history of the Earth and how they've been here in the past and done things. And
or how normal, like, less godlike creatures who created civilizations on the Earth that, you know, it's like in Antarctica or the bottom of the Pacific Ocean.
They're ruins from before mankind.
So, yeah, he...
And it's pretty vague, too. Not all of it is all that clear from...
No.
Lovecraft's fiction, it's been fleshed out
through other
writers and our role-playing games.
So. Right, there is quite a bit of work that's done by other authors besides H.P. Lovecraft. Really, H.P.'s the center of a group of authors that tended to work with the same material, and some of the writers were able to take it and make it their own, and some weren't.
Some just ruined it.
There is quite a bit of work out there that's available that's not written by H.P. Lovecraft. You just got to kind of get word of mouth on it and try to ask somebody who's read it. If you haven't read anything, I would start with H.P. Lovecraft and work your way outwards. It just doesn't pay to work inwards towards him, because then you're going to find that there is some kind of shatty, you know, fiction that's really kind of rotting on his back that isn't really as good as it should be. It's just that, you know, the people wrote with his material.
No, yeah, I don't think any of it's as good as his.
No.
A good primer would be the Metallica song, Call of Cthulhu.
Well, yeah, there's a ton of music.
Which provides an alternate spelling.
Yes.
Yes, yes. that does, yeah, the Cthulhu's like, there's several ways that people in the past have said how to pronounce Cthulhu, and I actually pulled up some notes from Wikipedia this afternoon to make sure that I was going to be able to address this. Now, H.P. Lovecraft himself actually said that it could be pronounced one of like three ways, and he didn't want to say, well, this is the way it is. He wanted to really kind of give an idea that it is so old that language being translated into, you know, the dialects of people using the language would have changed the wording of it, or changed the lettering, or changed the pronunciation, but overall it would have the same sort of idea in lettering, and it's only being able to be pronounced by people because it's the closest you can get to, like, that, you know, the formless alien language that Cthulhu himself would use.
Yeah.
or the beings that inhabit the world that they do. And he actually says that, you know, it can be like Cthulhu, Cthulhu, you know, or Cthulhut, or Thuthu, or Tulu. You know, it's just a ton of ways, but it's meant to say, and then often it's preceded by like great or great dead or dread Cthulhu. So, but also, I think I've always said Cthulhu.
Right, and I guess we should describe what it is, what Cthulhu is.
Well, I was gonna say it's always struck me as kind of odd that
because he's not one of the higher beings in the pantheon, that's the one it's named after.
Here. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that's because he's not. If I was going to say, it's not really good to think of it, to think of them in gods in the sense of like, you know, like the Greek pantheon.
No,
because they don't have the same, you know, the same or you know, or like Norse gods. I mean, I was going to say he's not Cthulhu's not
anthropomorphic.
Yeah, he's not the Zeus of the bunch. You know, he's not the Odin. You know, they don't have the same motivation. I said they're only godlike in the sense that when they came here and they had interactions with the people here, the people, you know, the humans can only perceive them as a godlike being because they're so beyond comprehension.
Right.
Or before
they're
that,
immensely powerful.
Yeah.
And,
you know, they were here before. Yeah, I mean, they predate everything, essentially, you know.
But there are rituals that are performed by worshippers that help to bring about their returning, you know, the coming out of their sleep, or they move so slowly through time that they do have to be aroused to awaken from time to time, and that's what these worshippers and followers try to do is to bring them from their slumber in order to, you know, bring about the great cataclysm that their arrival would, you know, bring about.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Cthulhu's concerned, and you're right, I mean, he isn't like the great big, like, gnarly of them all. You know, he's sort of like
the high priest.
Right, he's a herald, more or less, for some of, like, the other dimensional beings that don't reside here and are, like, dimension. Cthulhu is a dimensional being on our dimension, but he's from another dimension, what I understood.
He's from a planet in another dimension.
Right.
He's from, well, a lot of that stuff is from Yagath, which is actually Pluto, but
right.
Back then they didn't, you know, it was that planet. Which isn't a planet anymore, it's a minor planet now. It's out in the middle of no place.
Some stories, they've kind of like expounded upon like the rather vagueness of Lovecraft, and they actually named the planet that Cthulhu and his offspring and others like him it's from, and they call it Zoth. I'm not sure where it's supposed to be, if it's even supposed to be in this dimension, but they someone actually named it. And
right.
And, you know, it's taken as that's where they're from.
I think it's worth pointing out, though, that this stuff is made up, right? So when you go to the bookstore and you find when you find a copy of the Necronomicon,
yes,
that's made up.
Well, that's the problem with the Necronomicon is it wasn't written by Lovecraft. It was actually like just
there's several different versions of it, and there was all most of them were written in the 60s and early 70s.
Yeah,
and they're all fake.
The most famous one took a bunch of Babylonian stuff and
Sumerian
all
stuff. Yeah,
right. It isn't like a book of spells. It's not, you know.
It's not like the Tibetan Book of the Dead or the Egyptian Book of the Dead.
No. It's nothing where like the rituals and but it does have some bizarre incantations in it. So. If you feel like trying to read that stuff out loud in your room with your black candles, you feel like free. Because, I mean, hey, you know.
If you're in high school, you
whatever
take
gets
it to
you
the
going.
Park,
but if you can get that stuff happening, that's all right with
liquor.
Me.
Yeah.
Sneak I mean, in case we're wrong and everything, and they actually are real books, but, you know.
But.
So Cthulhu's this giant being
sort
that's
of
dead, but asleep.
Well, perhaps
in
we should talk
city.
About the story that's okay. behind it. The Cthulhu's often referred to in his form as a octopus-headed, bat-winged, leathery-skinned, green...
bulbous.
Yes, kind of, you know,
somewhat
squat, but also huge, giant monster that it's sort of both part Leviathan, also part, you know, like airborne being. You know, he's a water creature, and then he also has wings to be able to, like, I guess,
he's not a water creature, because the water has him catatonic.
Well, the fact that, I mean, he has a very his following, and I don't want to go so much into that just yet, but is water based, and he does have, like, sort of an aquatic cult following that's linked to him, but he does have, like, an octopus like head with tentacles coming from the mouth. Some like Zoidberg. Only green, big bat wings.
When you look up, like...
Or like Davy Jones from that...
Yeah, movie. A lot like, yeah, like Davy Jones from Pirates of the Caribbean. It a similar head shape.
Hundreds of feet tall.
Yeah, hundreds of feet tall and and monstrous.
Yes.
And eons ago, he was killed or dead or asleep. It's not quite clear.
Right.
And he's in a city.
Or in prison.
It's undeterminable whether or not Cthulhu can actually
And every
die.
Now and then, the city comes up to the... It's out in, like, off, out in the middle of nowhere.
Somewhere in the South Pacific.
Right.
Well,
and every now and then, the city rises up. And he's still dead, but then he influences people through dreams. That's why if you read a lot of Lovecraft fiction, all the people go nuts because they have crazy fucking dreams.
Well, they use that part from the poem, that is not dead, which it can eternal lie, in which strange ends, death, even death may die.
It's on the cover of Live After Death by Maiden.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
Yep. Again, another
but
reference.
Let's say that's
back.
Like, that's the main thing. There's the influence of these beings. They're, very rarely do they make much of an appearance.
Right.
You know, it's the way they influence.
Yeah, Cthulhu only made one appearance in
the
Lovecraft story.
Yeah, people or the cultists themselves.
Yeah, it's that sort of thing. It's and it's the way
artifacts
that these weird objects from other times, other dimensions, that type of things. These which are, you know, which are contain some of their powers, and they can obviously do these things, and then. The way that people who have had contact with the people that have been influenced by these beings, how they've been corrupted by it, and then that's sort of disseminates, you know, out from, but they don't exactly pop up and, you know, start ripping people's heads off all that often. But
right.
Let's say they don't have the sort of the same motivations of what people would think, like if you call them gods. I mean, they're so beyond comprehension. It's like chaos in the purest sense. I mean, they're not. It's sort of beyond like a sort of simple good and evil type thing.
Well, right. They're.
I mean, it's not really fair to think of them as evil beings.
They're influenced,
at least in my interpretation of it. They're sort of beyond that concept.
Right. I mean, they live in such like. Long periods that really the machinations of a being like that can't be immediate. They simply don't work like that. Yeah. They take place over eons. They really really long periods of time that you just can't really comprehend. They're just thousands and thousands and thousands of years and millennia piled up on top. You know, you can't and they work through that. To a goal that we don't even understand, right. Nor do the people who worship them understand. They just know that these beings are there, and they're there to worship and help them,
right.
And to bring them out of their slumber in order to, further their own goals. Like the story of the Shadow over Innsmouth, which is a pretty famous piece of work where the main character goes to a town in... in Massachusetts, I believe.
Yep, Innsmouth, Massachusetts.
Yeah, because he's the guy from that part of the Miskatonic University
contingent.
There's always somebody that's either studied or is.
Yeah, I think
has visited or something. I can't remember Shadow over Innsmouth. I haven't read it in a while, but he goes to.
Well, he just moved there.
He goes. Yeah, I mean, he goes to investigate the Marsh family, which is this family that. Was the big million, well, the rich people in this
right.
coastal
they were
town
like
of Innsmouth.
The patriarchs of this community.
And eventually, these people worship, they started to worship this sea god Dagon, which is a fish lizard
right.
creature that supposedly lived out in the sea. And the closer they got to it, it would just drive. If you read most Lovecraft stories, it always revolves around either somebody who's crazy telling a story, or somebody who's telling a story about somebody who's crazy that told him a story about something. Yeah. And they always go mad.
Or the guy who's so mad he's decided to kill himself, but he's going to tell the story of what happened.
Right.
Before
it always ends up this guy. You know, the stories always start out that this is my last will and testament, basically. And
or they're
insane.
In an insane asylum.
But that story.
Or they're on trial for something.
Yeah. So, spoiler alert here. I mean, haven't read these, you might want to pick them up.
Well, that's not giving anything away. I mean, it explains that up front.
That's one of those stories I'm talking about where, like, the horror element is like the people that have interacted with Dagon and have been influenced by him. You know, like I said, we don't want to give away the cool you know, ending to the story, but like how that corrupting influence, you know, they become tainted, corrupted by it, and then how that spreads. And that's how these beings, you know, that's how they mostly appear in the stories. You don't have them, you know, it's not like they're like Godzilla, you know, they come down and smash the city. It's not that sort of thing.
No, they're
you know?
Not out there fighting monsters.
Yeah, but it's sort of like there's someone who desires power, you know, or something like that.
Or knowledge, or just, you know, like they just want to get behind like something that, a lot of times they're affected by dreams that they've had, that they're forcing them to pursue something that they wouldn't normally pursue. You know, they're frightened of what the dreams hold. You know, they give information that they don't understand. They seem so real as that they had to have happened. And they're unclear as to where they fit in their lives, and they sort of drive them to move towards this knowledge that eventually may drive them insane to find out.
You get a lot of people with kind of a lot of the protagonists have this kind of morbid curiosity of like they know they should drop it and let it go, but they gotta find out, you know, what's in the old house that nobody goes in, you know, that type of thing.
Or
you
why
know.
All the townspeople change the subject when they ask about certain things.
Yeah,
they just like,
and they just keep going until.
Or what happened to my friend?
Yeah.
Yeah, or somebody went looking and then nobody was ever heard from again, or there's a house on the. You know, this side of town that no one ever goes near, and that it's been boarded up for years, or, you know, there's a church that has, you know, like eerie noises coming from it at all hours of the night, you know, on certain occasions when the moon's right and that the planets are in line. It's a whole lot of like astrological and astronomical
with some science thrown in too, which is always kind of cool.
With some, you know, early 20th century science, and it really is. It's kind of like detective sort of element in that there is quite a bit of that.
I guess, I mean, that story, The Call of Cthulhu, I guess is the one that officially sort of kicked it all into motion.
Right.
But as it developed from there, as you introduce these other, like I said, the varying sorts of the different beings, like I said, some are more physical, some are more, you know, just kind of
well, you have the Innsmouth like look in the Shadow
spiritual
of Innsmouth.
Yeah, for spirit, but they're sort of like a non-physical entity. You know, the ones that are more like that. There's a word I'm trying to think of.
Ethereal,
non-corporeal. Yeah, but then there's stuff like that in these beings, and then like I said, there's the just the other like ancient cosmic races that have been here in the past. So as the stories go on,
and that are still here,
and you know. As the stories go on, like is it in the vagueness of the writing is part of what makes it so cool. Is he doesn't bog it down in a bunch. It keeps it kind of mysterious and weird because they're only uncovering.
Which I think is a smart thing on this part when he wrote.
Sure, because they're only uncovering.
He never shoots his wad off with.
They're
like,
only
giving
you
the entire
picture. They uncover fragments of this and bits of that, but he creates this sort of like, you know, the secret history of the earth. You know what I mean? There's like all these weird things. Hidden, you know, they're thousands of years old, and you know, there's like the bit of a manuscript from somewhere that tells part of this,
you know,
or
the ancient statue
or
created
these
by
things,
like,
you know,
some artist
and people you know, and one guy manages to put a couple of pieces of something together and figure out that there's a whole hell of a lot more going on than we ever imagined.
Right.
But that's the only, you know, nobody ever really gets the big picture.
Well, because nobody sane understands enough of the story to be able to say, wow, this is really going on.
Because and it's because this,
in knowing this, what you find this, out, you're driven to the point of madness. So nobody wants to believe you because you're obvious. Because you're showing, you're exhibiting signs of overall, like, you know, schizophrenia at that point. You're like shaking and you're scared of everything, and you get to the point where you're, you know, like,
well, it's I mean it's
people are like, oh, you're hearing things when you actually are hearing things.
Well, my favorite is the story of the guy who knows that the things are coming into the angles in his walls.
It's the Hounds of Tynan-Dallas.
And he puts the paper on his walls in order to keep the
that happens
things
in a lot of
coming
stories.
In
Dreams
from
of
the
witch
other
house
dimension.
Is like that too,
but then like, but then there's a small little like he puts in the story he puts the he there's the spots between angles.
It's like where three angles come together.
Yeah,
it's like
three
something
angles
like that.
Come together as a dimensional gate.
That one is the witch house.
And he finds out enough information about them to where, you know, he's going to be a troublemaker for them. And
well,
so
he's talking about the Hounds of Tynan-Dallas.
They know he exists, so they come after him.
They're beings that exist in the angles of the universe, mm-hmm. whereas we exist in the curves of the universe.
So he hides the corners of his
room.
So
he seals himself in his room.
But they, and then they manage to come
he uses
out.
Uses like plaster and he makes everything rounded so there's no curves
but
anywhere.
Then but then in that story, don't, like the Hounds are like get together with the Chthonians and they start earthquakes. And is that another story?
Something else.
I think
the Hounds
just,
are.
I think it
are,
just chips are, away at some point okay. where he gets like trapped and caught by them.
Because they kind of allude to the Hounds being sort of like the Hellhounds. They're like they come for him because he's discovered.
But he's in the story. He's discovered something that is important, but no one would ever believe him because what he's saying. You know, he's saying that. You
well,
know,
I was going to say it's like the sort of the investigative, you know, for lack of a better term, the hero of you know. They stumble onto something kind of unusual, and like I said, if they may be able to piece a couple of things together and kind of and they figure out, you know. They find out something, you know, very, very strange and horrific in the truest sense of horror is going on. And it's so, it runs so contrary to everything they've ever been told about everything. I mean, it shakes, you know, the whole foundations of their concept of, like, you know, the history of the human race and the history of this planet and our position, you know, within everything. And then the whole sort of, you know, simple kind of our you know, the Judeo-Christian concept of God and the universe and all that. There's something that exists. They discover evidence of something that does not fit into that and is so dramatically and violently outside of that that it just blows their fucking mind, basically.
Right, right. It's like
cultists. But nobody has any idea. I don't think there's any, you know, none of them have an idea of the big picture. They get one little piece of it, and that's enough to just blow your mind.
Well, I think most of the At the Mountains of Madness, they actually is about an Antarctic expedition. They actually discover like a timeline for part of that whole thing.
Yeah,
and they actually run into the creatures.
Yeah, they find an ancient ruined city in Antarctica that predates anything known on this planet.
Right, it's
predates even like dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
luckily
I mean, it's,
enough,
it's
as
hundreds,
they walk through, I mean, you can read the story, but as they walk through it, there's evidence. I mean, there's like a record of what
and
has
it's
happened,
huge.
And they discover it.
I mean, it's incredibly huge. And as they sort of explore it, they kind of uncover the history of its creation and the history of the beings that lived there and where they came from and how long they've actually been here.
Yeah. And eventually, you know, they get chased out by something.
Yeah, I mean, it's that kind of thing, and it runs contrary to everything that anybody's ever known about the history of life on this planet, and it's that type of thing, and then. But even they, you know, nobody gets the whole thing. So there's these people that encounter little bits of the what's known as the mythos, and you know, these beings, and then their servants, which are less supernatural. They're just non-earthly creatures.
The elder things, the old.
But they're, you know, there's, you know, they're not. And some are very, like the old ones, which are very intelligent. And right. then there's things like the
flying polyps.
Yeah, I was gonna say like the Byakki or whatever they are, and the deep ones, you know, which are just alien beings, for lack of a better word. They're right. not, you know, there's some of them. There are like, you know, intelligent races from other planets and other dimensions.
That was my favorite story, is Whisper in Darkness.
Yes, the Mego are cool, but basically it's this idea. There's this whole sort of, you know, secret universe out there, and the people that have in the past here that have had interaction with it, it gets attributed to like myths and legends and the supernatural and magic and all this stuff, but it's mostly something that's just so otherworldly and cosmic that it can't be, you know, it just has to be perceived. That's the only way they can wrap their head around it. You
right,
know what I mean?
That's one way it's always, well, not always, but oftentimes encountered through people who are dreaming about something.
Right. I was mentioning the dreams.
The whole dreamlands thing.
Well, it gives credence to the fact that your dreams are actually important, you know, that they're messages from somewhere else rather than just being like, you know.
And that a whole separate reality exists.
Subconscious
in dreams.
Playing. And that's how some of these beings, the only way that they can communicate is that they in dreaming, influence the dreams of others because their imaginations. Can only be perceived in dreams. So, you know, then the waking mind goes insane by understanding those things. The dreaming mind gets a glimpse of it and causes the waking mind to go pursuing it, which is what I was saying earlier. But yeah, in the Mountains of Madness, you actually had like tangible alien beings.
Yeah.
That were from another planet that were living here eons ago, that were part of there's sort of a war between the gods going on, or the war between these beings. They're called a number of things. From the elder things are the sort of the physical alien creatures that built these cities that were all over the earth, and the only surviving city was this one in Antarctica. And then
it was the only one above, the surviving city above the water.
Right.
They enslaved the Shoggoths.
Right. And they used them as their slaves to build the cities. And then the Shoggoths revolted and helped destroy them or send them back beneath the waves. And this one was the one that like they all sort of huddled into and survived. But yeah, the Shoggoths were these creatures that they manipulated to do their bidding, and they created the stone structures, you know, the non-Euclidean mathematics, you know, they sort of like, I don't know, I don't really understand how they built.
They were kind of like
things.
The two amorphous things on the Gloop and Gleep from the
Oh, the Shoggoths?
The Herculoids.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right?
Shoggoths were...
Well, they took whatever form... I mean, read this in the story, but they take whatever form they need them as. They're either like...
Yeah.
Like
but yeah, so that story is basically... Yeah, I mean, that's actually... They're actually alien beings. There's really nothing supernatural to it. But, you know... But
the same way with Whisper in Darkness.
Yeah.
Well, there's an illusion of this being supernatural in some sense. It's like extra-natural.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like they're so... They're like cosmic with the big C. You know what I mean? They're like so beyond the comprehension of a mortal human.
Mm-hmm.
You know that they can people always. The only way they can kind of, you know, wrap their head around it a little bit is to say, you know, well, it's supernatural because they could do things that people can't do.
Well,
you
right. They're
just because they're intelligent and highly.
They can grant powers that we would call magical.
Yeah. Well, right. Yeah. They're cultists. They're, you know, that you would consider, you know, like there's these, you know, deep old religions that these people seem to follow in towns and, you know, faraway places and, you know, villages on the edges of, like, you know, nowhere in, like, you know, kind of run-down places in on the coastlines up in, like, the northeast. And And they worship these things, and it's kind of like, you know, it's an underground sort of religion that nobody really talks about. Only the people in the town know like about.
Old, like, Creoles in the swamp.
Right, like, especially that.
Yeah, I mean, there's in Greenland. You get
the Chocho people.
You get the impression that obviously, yeah, like at one time, you know, the influence of these beings and stuff was much more widespread. It was much more overt. And that, like, over time, you know, as, like, that within their own fighting with each other, obviously, you know, that things have changed. And then all that's left in modern-day Earth is, like, these little remnant vestiges of that.
You're right.
Which like are, like, these little pockets where there's, yeah, there's the weird cult here, and there's the, you know, the old, the one isolated creepy town that nobody goes to, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's little pockets of it.
Or the leftovers present in, like, modern religion.
Yeah.
Because it's unclear as to whether or not Lovecraft is saying in these that God doesn't exist. It's just that he's saying that these things do, and that these old ancient religions worship real beings. And these sometimes beings are malevolent, and they're real, and they have, you know, machinations that are far beyond anything that we can comprehend. And then some of the things that we believe, you know, to be like a benevolent God or a benevolent being are sort of like a safety net for ourselves to not go insane by the fact that there are these truly evil beings out there doing, you know, these crazy things. And then or at least that's what I've always kind of pulled from it, because he does describe, like, voodoo rituals and things like that in, like, New Orleans, you know, the Cthulhu cults and the peoples in the coastal areas that sort of worship him because they look towards the sea for guidance from Cthulhu. And then, you know, anybody who gets close enough to sort of understand what they're about, you know, either gets, you know, killed or learns too much and goes insane and nobody
or they commit suicide.
Right. And then, yeah, and they go into,
like, or they just walk into the sea to find Dagon or Cthulhu and they don't come back.
Right.
But sometimes they do.
And sometimes the government actually believes someone and takes action.
Mm-hmm.
But they sometimes tie it into actually, like, what we would have as, like, surviving mythologies. A lot of Egyptian stuff with Nyarlathotep, and the Cthulhu stuff is usually like the Sumerian, like Tiamat or the Leviathan. Yeah. The Judean.
Well, it just makes sense. If you're going to write about this stuff, you might. I mean, you're going to pull from other mythologies that already exist and just, you know, go with it.
So. It'd really be interesting if, I don't even know if he's into it, or I don't even know if he's still alive, but if you could have, like, a conversation with the hero, mythic hero guy, Joseph Campbell.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if he's Cthulhu. Still around or not.
I don't think so.
He was.
Well, you know, I don't know if you can, really, because
mythic image.
Again, all the Lovecraft stuff that he wrote was so vague. I mean, he just kind of threw that. I've read enough of it where you can tell that he's just kind of like,
because
he's writing something and he's throwing something in. So he's just kind of making it sound mystical.
Because some of it seems to gel a little bit. Yeah, because the people that have done the tedious analysis of the stories, there are contradictory things in them.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's making up stuff in one story that directly contradicts something from another story.
Because one of the guys...
Because he didn't have, like, the master plan to...
It's not like Tolkien, where he's writing, like, backstory that goes way beyond anything he really ever wrote.
I mean, he borrowed names from other writers too. Yeah, I mean, Haster, the word Haster never appears in a Lovecraft maybe once in a Lovecraft story.
But it comes from
Ambrose.
Haster the Unspeakable.
It comes from Ambrose Bierce. Okay.
You spoke the name should not be spoken.
Well, I mean, we weren't going to talk about this, but that's a derelict myth. So.
Lovecraft talks about
he who should not be named and all that stuff, and August Derleth
is the
author that should not be named, which is a shepherd guy.
If you come away from this show with any information at all that you can use in your life, is do not read August Derleth.
And the reason why you can't find Lovecraft fiction for free on the internet, even though technically it should be public domain, is because of Derleth's freaking
publishing company.
Because it just goes to show that mediocrity lives on, because he outlived them all.
Even though I have all of it on my Palm Pilot, I'd be happy to provide it to anybody.
Well, I was going to say, but in terms of, I guess, the theme of what this show usually deals with.
What are you going to do?
I was going to say is like working through a lot of the stories is this concept of like I said, the stuff of they've been here and there's this the sort of the lingering threat of like the day they come back to Earth. And there's the people that want them to come back because they think they're sort of like they're like the the cultists, the devotees of so and so.
Well, we haven't and talked you know, that much
and,
about that.
And they're going to be the chosen ones or whatever, you know.
Well,
I was going to say, but you know, there's they make mention of it at least in a few stories of this idea of like you know when they come here or when you know when Cthulhu awakens and all that stuff. You know, there's that sort of lingering possibility. Like I said, and there's the people, you know, the people that are the worshippers and stuff, they want that, you know, and there's people that are trying to bring that about, and then, you know, but again, it's the sort of thing of like they don't have the sort of motivations that can be explained. The beings don't have the sort of motivations of like they don't really want to come here and rule the earth like
they
that,
don't
that,
care about you.
That, nope. Exactly, they're so beyond that. That's the kind of the folly of their followers to think that they even give a shit about you, you know, that they don't want you to worship them. They're so beyond that concept.
But they end up coming back. So and they'll come back when we come back from our break here.
My name is Jack Ward, and I'm host of the most inclusive club on the net, the Sonic Society. Each week we meet and listen to the very best radio drama has to offer from the 21st century. You'll hear works from all the great innovators of audio cinema. Podcatch us at www.sonicsociety.org.
From my spider hole in Gilbert, Arizona, this is the Truth Seekers Podcast. I'm Danny, your host, moderator of the Truth Seekers message board on Rise.com, and legend in her own mind, inviting you to join me as I continue my search for truth in audio form. Each episode, you will get headlines from different places around the internet world, along with commentary, interviews, and guests, all geared towards widening your perspective and guiding you in your own endless search for truth. Come on over to audioaddict.libsyn.com and join me here in the spider hole. Trust me, there is room for all seekers here, but no room for closed-mindedness.
This is an update from GSG, the Geek Survival Guide. Today's tip: if you find yourself abducted by aliens, do not panic. Statistics show that over 92% of alien abductees are eventually returned with no lasting physical damage. You may not be returned in your own time period, and there may be some intervening probing, but chances are good you'll get back to terra firma more or less intact. And ask for names. If they invade, placing themselves within the jurisdiction of our earthly courts, you could be looking at a huge cash settlement. For more Geek Survival tips, visit the Geek Survival Guide at gsguide.blogspot.com. We now return you to your regularly scheduled program.
Clear your sound.
Yeah, we're back. But, things that come back. That's right. Yeah, you gotta whatever language, what strange like language that they use in a lot of the stories. The
it's called made up.
Yeah,
one of them is
you know that was one of the things about like one of the Necronomicon, the most popular Necronomicon book, the Necronomicon that was published, and they still publish that thing.
Yeah.
Was like the caveat was, well, you know, you could call up this stuff and destroy the planet, but nobody knows how the language is pronounced, so most likely it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So you can draw all that shit on the floor. You can stand in the middle of it and, like, drop your blood or whatever and try to read out of the book, but since nobody knows how it's pronounced, it's not going to happen.
Because it's up, up, left, left, right, right, A, B, start, select. That's all you need to do in a circle of blood. You know, you got to draw the strange pentagram of blood on the ground and, you know, light your black candles, and then it's, you know, left, left, right, right, up, down, A, B, start, select. Then you're going to call forth a number of, like, creatures. But yeah, Adam was talking about Shub-Niggurath, the...
Black coat of the wood, but a thousand young.
Yep, yep. And, I mean, there's not a whole lot of fiction about him, so nobody really knows what's going on. Yeah.
Shub-Niggurath is a female.
It's like a cloud. It's like a black
with
cloud.
With horse hooves that go out and come in.
Yeah, with a thousand... like, it's got, like... Yeah, it's got weird, like, hooved feet in its... It doesn't, yeah.
And more often than not, there are tentacles. Everything seems to have
tentacles. There's always
tentacles. It's like anime. There's tentacles.
Sure. Yeah, the Japanese animators took that and ran with it.
Oh, yeah. If there's anything in...
We can thank Lovecraft for the birth of tentacle rape.
Tentacle rape is a Lovecraftian theme. He couldn't really run with it so much back then. But yeah, it's...
But what I was going to say...
Those guys were pretty shaken up by what they saw. Maybe there's a little bit going on behind the scenes, you know, like... Hey man, I saw some stuff with a tentacle. I don't really want to talk about.
In the sort of the apocalyptic sense of things, I think one thing he always makes painfully clear is like in the face of all this is the absolute utter hopelessness of the human condition, and it's like there's just no way that you can stop it. There's no way you can beat them.
Oh, it defines, I mean, it defies reason.
I mean, everyone. It's like I said, like the thing of like. If they come back to Earth, or if you know, if Cthulhu rises and all that stuff, that it's just completely and utterly fucking hopeless.
If they happen to take notice of you,
yeah.
Or
if
they will just totally
well,
ruin your day.
Think of it this way. Think of the human race as a colony of termites, and they all talk about the Orkin man, you know, as being like this great and, you know, giant being that lives, you know, in another dimension, and that one day will return, you know, and they all, you know, chew their wood and and some of them worship the Orkin man, and then he comes in the house and destroys everything, you know, and kills them all. That's exactly what's going on in this.
I mean, you get the sense that we're so utterly insignificant that, like, it's purely as a matter of, like, just a whim that they would annihilate us. Because they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it out of even, like, evil or malevolence. Because I think even that concept is you know...
We've been put lower on the food chain.
Yeah, it's like they don't, like I said, they're not necessarily evil. They're sort of, like, beyond that concept.
There are a few that actually take notice, and specifically Nyarlathotep, or however you pronounce it.
He's a strange...
he seems to get, like, power and... Enjoyment in some of his forms out of human suffering that he has caused.
Right, and so much is that he actually is one of the only things in the... he's the only being other than maybe some of like the deep ones or the hybrid deep ones.
Well, the deep ones are really little more than another form of like... They might as... I mean, not, they're not humans... But we're on the same scale,
right? Yeah, they're just an offshoot of humans.
They're a physical being.
But Nyarlathotep or Nyarlathotep, it's really hard to pronounce, but it's actually two different words. But is supposed to be described as like a handsome man that moves like in, you know, that does sort of like.
He was the origin for the old like Salem legend of the black man of the woods.
Right. Yeah,
and he's also known as the Egyptian in the one story.
Well, one of the writers, Locke, says that he was actually patterned after Nikola Tesla, in that Nikola Tesla would like do this sort of grand, you know, show of his science. You know, and then, you know, there would be, like, people would be just awed by it and stuff. But he would walk about, and, you know, people were kind of like, you know, maybe he's up to no good. And what Nyarlathotep
that might
is,
give you an idea is, of how to pronounce it.
Is representing in a lot of the books is what we consider to be like the archetypal Satan figure. And that he does have like a he works through deceit and lies.
Well, he's a relatively
he's also said to have invented the hydrogen bomb.
You see what I'm saying though?
Well, I'll say, I mean, he's like, he's more he's not like you know quite on like the scale of you know the big ones. You know what I mean? He's
no,
he's,
but
he's,
we're unsure
he's,
where
he's more. He's more
well, it
of like
seemed
a,
that was dependent upon which form he took.
Yeah, but I always got the impression that like originally he seemed to be more physical. Like he well, could change his form, but he's not quite as you know ultra cosmic as some of the
well,
others.
Well, this passage actually comes from my notes, and it says. Nyarlathotep enacts the will of the outer gods, like Shub-Niggurath, and the ones that live like in
the outer gods are Hastur and Azathoth. And
right, the ones that like live in the center of the universe.
No, Cthulhu's in.
He was a great old.
No, he's
one.
A great old.
He's a great old. Well, there's the outer gods and
there's the elder gods.
Yeah, there's other gods and out. There's no real.
Yeah,
it's kind of vague on what's what.
The only but, the only elder god they really.
But Azathoth is like the creator
well,
of the universe.
Well, he says he's a servant of Azathoth. So Nyarlathotep is a servant of Azathoth and his messenger, mm-hmm. and then he says that, and he fulfills their wishes. And what he, but unlike the outer gods, causing madness is more important than and enjoyable than death and destruction. So he likes to toy with his foods more or less. You know, he likes to play with mankind because he knows that like they're able to awaken or cause rituals that will open gates to bring them into our universe, such as like you know atomic weaponry and. Things like dimensional gates that can be opened by man. You know, that now that we're in the age of, like, mankind really developing science that is on the level of, you know, destroying ourselves, we're able to
well,
do,
I think, yeah, so much of it is...
I mean, here's a... I don't...
So much of it is kind of strangely scientific.
If you want to talk about Shub-Niggurath and Nyarlathotep, it's all... there's like two pages of it right here in The Whisper in Darkness. Which is like the weird recorded voice of the Migo talking about
yeah.
it. So.
The
isn't that weird?
Yeah, I don't know.
I was going to say like a lot of it is even like through the various chapters of human history, a lot of it is based around a kind of a science rather than it's what the sort of the ignorant people would call
magic. Right.
But it is the science of its time, you know what I mean? there is a sense of like this kind of in that sort of the seeking of knowledge and the learning of these things, like how it you know often gets ugly when you learn a little bit too much or you learn the wrong
like
things,
the, right.
you know.
The weird mathematics of the witch house.
I was gonna say like Dreams in the Witch House, which is like it's like witch magic, but it's like math based magic. It's like the weird like physics magic of opening portals to other dimensions, but the people that have no concept of what's going on thinks it's witchcraft and magic, but it's
right.
an actual like mathematically based like
well,
interdimensional
incantations and things like that.
Interdimensional
they're opening
physics,
dimensional
yeah.
gateways that bring in these.
But there's always that sense of like you know even like the good guys in the stories for like you know for lack of a better term to simplify it, the good guys and the bad guys are often those. You know, seekers of knowledge. There's that people that take it a little too far. You know, there's the you know they the bad guys. You know, the devotees of these evil mysterious beings. You know, and then the good guys. They want to find out what's going on. You know, and then everybody gets killed.
yeah, or goes insane.
Yeah, and then just wishes to die, hopes to die. You know, that sort of thing. That's what I mean. It's
or
like
they find some way to. Enhance their pituitary gland, like
pineal gland.
As much as there are people,
and then you can see all this stuff, and it's all
about,
fucked up.
What about like the character in the Dunwich Horror? that it's trying to bring about, you know, the beast, you know, arising.
Oh, he's just looking for his twin brother. That's what that is. The Dunwich Horror is the twin brother of the goat boy, whatever his name is. I can't remember, Wilbur or something or other.
Wilbur Wheatley.
I mean, Wattley. The Dunwich Horror is the creature at the end of the story is his brother.
Yeah, that his dad was a great wizard.
But his father's a wizard, yeah.
Yeah, his father was a warlock, yeah. But
he's lived hundreds and hundreds of years or something.
But he's
like that.
Got some of that going on.
What he's done is he's created a hybrid human, you know, interdimensional being by, you know, experimenting with
his father dabbling in the wrong kind of stuff.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
And then
Wilbur
got a goat face and
mating with the wrong type of women?
Well, that's just it. You bring about these things.
There's weird genetic stuff going on inside those stories too.
They take on the form of like this dimension, so they tend to be anthropomorphic to a certain.
In a lot of sense, it's like the weird, twisted variant on like the Greek thing of like, you know, Zeus coming down and having sex with a woman and then they have the kid, you know.
Right,
but if it comes down in like bull form, then they have the Minotaur.
Yeah. It's like a really twisted variation on that sort of thing of like these beings, you know, and their sort of physical influences on, you know, and there are, but I say it's just the sort of, it's another manifestation of that sort of the corruption of like whenever they come into contact with people in any way,
whether they
actually physically do or just the influences of their powers and stuff, it always seems to corrupt, whether physically or mentally or anything.
The main theme is like corruption of.
Yeah.
Well, and that's fear of man also is the corruption of the human form. It's like the ugliness that's brought about by, a deformation of.
But there's so much of that
like
of
physical
like
being.
Some, you know, some
and this
guy
is sort of explaining it in a much more sinister way than just being.
There's so much of that sense of like the legacy of it. You know, somebody's ancestor, you know, did something. You know, he was like I said again. You know, he was perceived as they were perceived as like a witch or a warlock,
right,
or something like that because they were dabbling in something that nobody else understood. You know, but for the most part, they are this kind of the seeker of knowledge type of thing. They're not always necessarily evil.
But he was trying to bring out I don't know if he was doing it in the book so much, but I know that in the movie from the 60s, he was trying to bring off
the Dunwich hippie.
Yeah,
Stockwell.
Dean Stockwell. From
it's Yogg. He's
Yogg Sothoth, yeah. And he's trying to bring
the keeper
about
keeper and the gate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Yogg Sothoth is another one that's sort of
Vince Clortho.
yeah, which that movie
Key
does
Master of Gozer
quite a bit to that sort of
one of the, that's one
weird,
of the Yogg Sothoth themes is that like it was either with the Silver Key or through the gates of the Silver Key is one of the cosmological like themes of like some of the Cthulhu mythos was that. All reality basically is happening at the same time, and all like different localities are in fact the same locality. And it sort of makes sense, it sort of doesn't, like the being you know as like yourself and the whole past lives and future lives thing, even if they're not human, even if they're not on Earth, they're all happening at the same time, ultimately. And that if you go through the gates of the Silver Key, you can. If you can master it, you can choose which reality you end up in as yourself.
Well, here, like in the case of Charles Dexter Ward, which is basically the story of Yogg Sothoth, and he appears as a mass of like bubbles that like are sort of in and out of reality, but they're sort of glowing and floating and. But what it says is that Yogg Sothoth is an outer god, in my notes here, and it's And as far as what you were saying about like space and like everything being as one,
the space time.
Yeah, it says that like it was an all in one and one in all of limitless being and self, not merely a thing of one space time continuum, but allied to the ultimate animating essence of existence, whole unbounded sweep, like everything being condensed into one, you know, sort of layered reality.
Yeah.
And then the last utter sweep, which has no confines and which is outreaches fancy and mathematics alike, it was perhaps that which certain cults, or certain secret cults of the earth had whispered as Yog-Sothoth, and which has been a deity under other names, that which the crustaceans of Yoggoth worship as the Beyond One, and which the vaporous brains of the spiral nebula know as it by an untranslatable sign. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you get out of this.
That's what I mean. Like, there's the sort of like ultra cosmic nature of it all, and like, and I said the incredible insignificance of us in the big picture. You know,
that there's so much going on to bring these beings out, and that when, in doing so, they unleash horrors unimaginable for all of us. Because, yeah, you're opening dimensional realities that do not work well together.
I mean, that's the sort of like the mind blowing essence of the stories,
right?
Is that there's this big picture. There's so much going on, and like, through like space, time, interdimensional, all this stuff, and we're this phenomenally insignificant, tiny little speck of dirt in the middle of it all. You know what I mean? And it's like,
right. Significant in some ways, though. That was kind of, because there's always,
well, like they wanted Wilbur's twin to reproduce.
Not necessarily completely, you know, powerless or totally unimportant.
But, yeah.
But I mean, it's just the kind of like when people realize, you know, that they get some sort of a clue as to what's going on, that like, you know, the vision that most people have of us being, you know, we're the highest form of life on this planet, and we're, you know,
the center of the universe.
Yeah, all that type of stuff. That's it just shatters that illusion.
God looks just like us, except he has a big beard and robes and,
yeah,
right.
And he's sitting up on and
he lives in space.
He's sitting on a cloud with Buddha and the Colonel.
Colonel Sanders?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. But that kind of, you know, visage.
That's the part of it, like when you stop and think about it, that's the really sort of, you know, the freaky essence of it all.
Well, there's a lot of like lesser beings that are involved in this too, you know, that are kind of you know, they're servants on a different plane, and they want us to do things that would further, you know, their own designs. And like I was saying with Wilbur, you know, trying to get Wilbur's brother to reproduce, you know, so there would be more of his being around. And then in doing so, the worshiping of Yog-Sothoth would be complete, and in bringing about his return, simply by having all these things that were kind of hybrid beings of both, you know, Yog-Sothoth and humans. But then you also have, like, in Charles Dexter Ward, where they're trying to basically, which is like the sort of the, you know, I hate to bring it up if anybody, you know, like, seen it, the Reanimator. It's sort of like, you know, trying to revive dead flesh. You know, they're and it's not touched upon so much in the movie, but in the book, it's basically, you know, they're using incantations to revive, like, dead people. So, but it's bigger than that. You know, it's
of necromancy and Lovecraft.
It's not as simple as, like, that's not the end result. It's just a result. It's just a side effect of using that incantation, is that you revive the dead also. You know, and they don't come back the way you think they're going to come back, obviously. And then they're not, you know, it's not the only thing that's going to happen. A lot of, like, bigger stuff is going on, too. It's just a side effect. So, but that's where it comes into that mankind has basically taken. Yes.
Mankind has taken.
Hath tooketh.
Hath tooketh. I like
hath,
that better.
Hath tooketh?
Yeah. So mankind
like
hath tooketh.
Feast impediment.
Hath tooketh
is like a, you know, another,
that's another god, right?
Ass.
Hath tooketh.
Well, they've taken these things that they have found, these like bits of information, these equations that do things, and they see the fact that they can raise the dead, but they also don't see the, but they don't see the fact that in raising the dead, they're also unleashing, you know, super horrific beings that that are the reason why the dead's coming back to life, you know, and eventually they go insane or get killed.
It's kind of all beings. Like a lot of the stories like deal with, you know, like human hubris, you know, like, oh, the humans are like, well, if we can bring like Cthulhu back to Earth, like you were saying earlier, you know, he'll see us as his servants and we'll have a special place. Or in reality, you just might be the last person
last. That's right. Yeah. You can only hope to get eaten last by the Cthulhu, which is good enough reason to worship him. So I'm not saying you shouldn't, but you know,
I'm betting on the great race of Yeth taking my mind and shooting it out into space or time. And I'll become like some like barrel alien, you know,
winding
like,
up in a Mego brain, winding up in a Mego brain cylinder.
That's fine.
Half
with me,
crab
man.
And
that's
half...
better than eating.
Yeah,
half crab, half like sea cucumber with a starfish head. And...
or floating back to Yugoth in a brain somewhere.
Yeah. Right, right.
That's better than being eaten, man.
Well, Cthulhu, in so much as the episode's called, you know, Cthulhu, it's the call of Cthulhu. The story is in three parts. Its first part, it deals with, like, the dreams of artists that are, you know, artists are supposed to be more in touch with the ethereal, and therefore...
That's just because they get high more.
Yeah, they get high more, right? and the, you know, and they're dealing with the the imaginations of their dreams and making what they see out of them. So like, there's artists that are making these statues from their dreams. You know, they're seeing the being in their dreams, and they're compelled to make these statues. You know, and that's the kind of the gist of the first part of the story is this. You know, basically an art collector is trying to get like a hold of one of these statues and finds like a guy that's having these dreams and makes this statue, and he's like, you know, got this thing going on. And then the guy that like,
it was the dude who found his like references to stuff in his like great uncle's papers or whatever.
Right, but he ends up finding like the artist that originally does it.
Made like the bas relief of basically like Cthulhu coming out of his tomb in Rilley or Rilley.
Right, and it's, you know, very... It looks real, and he's like, how can somebody's imagination produce this? And then the guy, you know, seems insane, too, so he's not really sure. And then, like, from there, what is he, killed? There's Carlos, I know, or no, it's not Carlos,
from,
it's Castro.
He ends up in some, like, anthropology conference, or talking to somebody who was in an anthropology conference, and some, like, guy from New Orleans was like, oh yeah, I've seen that before. And
right,
then he tells
him
a story.
He says
that
there's like a cult there that worships this thing, and like that, you know, is part of like a old school cult.
Out in the swamp.
Yeah,
out
in the
bayou.
Making hush puppies and worshiping Satan.
Sure. Eating catfish.
Swamp thing.
Yep, riding around on airboats.
Worshiping the swamp thing.
Because that's the shit.
A beat of beer. And...
Yeah, right. Because if you go to New Orleans in the French Quarter, there's a lot of, like, statuettes that you can buy. You can get, like, a, you know...
And alligator feet.
Yep, and alligators. And that sort of thing. But, yeah, then like...
Then he ends up in, like, Samoa or New Zealand or something.
Yeah.
Well, there's the sailor, the guy that's there's the ship goes down or
well,
something.
Well, yeah, that's the culmination of the story.
Yeah.
It's, like, the last part is...
He ends up in Norway and...
Yeah, he finds that basically this is worldwide. Like, that it's not just these statues that this guy, this one single guy has dreamed up and made. It's a worldwide sort of anthropological phenomenon.
Yeah, there was
of
the
people worshiping this thing.
There was the thing the artist made from his dreams. There was the old guy who saw something in a cave in Greenland with that had, like, some, you know, weird... inscription that couldn't really be pronounced in any language. And then there was the thing that the detective took from the crime scene down in the Louisiana swamp.
Right.
And then they all correlated to what the Norwegian sailor saw when they battled all those degenerates on the boat.
Well, this guy's like, you know, he's one of the Miskatonic dudes, you know, from the university.
Well, that story, I guess, obviously, if you've never read any of it, that's a good starting place. Because that story kind of, it hints at that kind of thing of like how it's very widespread. You know, it's touched all world culture in the past.
Right.
But in different areas, you know, the remnants are interpreted different ways. But they said their influence was much more overt in the past. But then as it's kind of dwindled or become more obscure, and there's these isolated pockets of it. Yeah, and these people, you know, they go looking for one thing and it links them to something else, and then they go investigate that. And, you know, like I said, they'll piece a couple of things together and figure out that there's something really fucking weird going on.
Right.
And it's way bigger than anything they ever imagined, but nobody ever quite gets it all.
Well, of the Cthulhu cult, like Castro, the guy that's like this old, you know, old cultist and
old Cuban guy,
right? Yeah, I assume. I mean, he's got a mighty Spanish name there. I wonder if he has that great like jogging suit.
Could just
that,
be from San Francisco.
Well, Castro, Fidel's got that great like Adidas jogging suit that's got like his name on it, and it's in the color of the Cuban flag.
It's Adidas.
It's Adidas. Yes, but yeah, it. He's saying that like the Cthulhu cult wants to bring about like the rise of Cthulhu in order for him to realize his great return to being like a being of both matter and ethereal nature. Like that, he says that like when the stars are right, you know, these beings can go from, you know, planet to planet, basically flying through like the nether regions of space. But when the stars are wrong, they're sort of dead, and they have to rest, and they're, you know,
they can
that's
still like
they're
reach
imprisoned
out with
underneath the sea, and that's where Cthulhu is. So like this ship encounters an island in the middle of like the Pacific, in the South Pacific, I guess around New Zealand or someplace. It's like in the, you know, pretty far South Pacific, and they find this island
it's out in the middle of nowhere. Because he gives the coordinates.
Yeah, it comes up out of the water, and then they're going across this.
It's south of, it's farther south than Skull Island.
Okay.
Because last, I looked that up on Google Earth once, too.
Skull Island?
Yeah.
Well, the island's called Rillier.
What about Monster Island?
I don't think they ever give
Monster
the coordinates.
Island's
Monster
like
Island.
Pretty close to like Japan, I would think.
It's gonna suck to be them, you know.
Yeah,
but they never tell where that is.
But this ship finds this island, and they go like kind of hunting on the island to see what the hell's going on, because you know they've never seen it before, and they make it to like, you know, across this sort of barren, freaked out like landscape, and then they find a. Like what they consider maybe is like a temple, but all the math is wrong. Like the buildings are, they call it non-Euclidean mathematics is being used for the architecture. So like things are big on one side and, you know, small on the other, but like you're walking uphill, but you're really walking downhill, you know.
And
this big
cavernous opening, is it a doorway or like a cellar?
Right. They can't tell because of the way that it's laid out. You know, it's like one of those optical illusion rooms. And
the world of illusion.
Right. So like
Doug Henning was behind it all, man.
And Mr. Goodbody. Because I think they were the same dude. But I'm not really sure about that. But yeah, then they sort of halfway awaken Cthulhu, which is bad news, you know, because comes out and sort of grabs and starts eating people, but he's not
quiet.
Really, you know, it's like you know, going in, you know, and disturbing the guy, you know, and he sort of wakes up and he's like groggy and he's just like, oh, food, you know, and just starts eating people, and everybody runs away, you know, and gets
on the
ship.
Well, he's been hibernating for Ever well, I meet thousands yeah, but of more
it's, years. It's a premature awakening. Like he's sure. not supposed to awaken at this time, you know. And then they yeah, like they take off and they like... go looking back for the island that's gone. It sinks beneath the waves again. You know, it just happens to be for that period of time that it wakes up. But you have to read the story. The story's really good. But
did you see the volcanic island that rose out of the South Pacific a couple months ago?
I know yeah. that like Tuvalu is sinking beneath the waves.
But the guy, the tourist guy, got the photographic. Took the series of pictures like over a couple hours as it was rising out of the ocean.
Maybe yeah, there was a it bunch is. Of like pumice.
There it is.
There was like he was on a boat. I think it was like him and his wife. They were in the South Pacific and like they saw smoke coming out of the water, and it was like bubbling and stuff. And it was
that's
actually
bad news.
And then like they like sat there and took pictures over a couple of hours, and it actually starts to come up out of the water.
It's
like
be
it's
a new
steaming.
Hawaiian island scene. Well, geologically seeing, which yeah. means 10,000 years from now.
But what we were saying, like, what do the people have to gain and stuff from this? Is like, the story kind of says that like the Cthulhu's like cultist subjects would like sort of revel free and wild, you know, without like the constraints of good and evil, and that laws and morals, you know, would be just irrelevant, and there wouldn't be any...
Well, there's the immediate advantages
well,
that
they're
after.
Well, they'd be able yeah. to
but ultimately
partake
they'll
in their...
they'll all be destroyed.
Well, yeah, but they'd be able to partake in, like, the...
They'll be able to run around naked and have dirty sex all the time.
Like the Wiccans, man.
Exactly.
So, like, they're hoping for, like, you know, magical powers granted in
we're
the
we're going to get some email.
And then also when, you know, they think that when Cthulhu rises around, they're going to be, like, made, you know, I'm going to be given Australia. I'm going to be given North America, you know.
Well, and I don't think that there's much in the way of, like, I'm going to rule an area
like
land.
Zod, like Zod did with Luther?
Well, yeah. you don't see a whole lot of, like, people in the mythos, like, talking about, like, how they're going to be, you know... Well, the ruler of anything, they're yeah. sort of going to live in a, they're embracing chaos is what they're doing. They're saying that like it's going to be wonderful. There's not going to be the constraints of law. There's not going to be my day to day because I figure you know all these guys are fishermen because they all live on the shores of like whatever place. You know they don't like going out on their boats. And,
they're chaotic neutral.
No, I'd say evil. They have to be chaotic evil, right? So they go out on their boats.
You could maybe CN with the E in parentheses.
All right, whatever. But they're if you anyway. Worship something, you have to be the same alignment as that thing, man. That's
well,
how it works.
Well,
man.
I mean, all
and
those fisher people
is the embodiment of chaotic.
They
evil.
They worship Dagon not because they're going to get something in the end of times. They worship because there was a drought of fish. And they were promised
right,
food.
And they promised food
so
by
worshiping.
So
they got fish.
Right.
And that's why they worshiped.
Mm-hmm. And then the girl's like half Dagon or half being of...
Yeah. They all had, you know, then they grow gills and walk out into the sea and die.
Yeah.
Pretty much. That's yeah, what
that was the whole city underneath that a lot of them lived in.
Huh?
In the stories.
Yeah.
And then the government came and like shut down
torpedoed
Dan's mouth. Yeah.
Are we talking the movie or the story?
Talking about the story.
The story.
Innsmouth, like, stopped being.
Yeah.
Although in the movie, the guy, like...
I don't know. I haven't seen a movie.
It's sort of a blending of both. It's, like, part Shadow.
Yeah, the Dagon movie is more...
Dagon.
It's part Dagon and part Shadow over Innsmouth.
Right. It doesn't quite have, like, the same festival thing going on, but the town is basically, you know... You gotta see it.
You might be
it's
confusing
decent.
That from...
It's a good send-up of Lovecraft. Unfortunately, people out there... Lovecraft movies have not been the great films you'd think they would be. You know, unfortunately, nobody's really ever pulled one off that's halfway decent. I mean, there's references and things like Army of Darkness, where you have the Necronomicon being referenced, and then you know, there's The Reanimator, which is a fun movie to watch. And I'm a big Jeffrey Combs fan, and I'll pretty much watch anything he's in, you know, because he's kick ass.
The Reanimator and From Beyond are really good, and they don't take themselves too seriously.
Right. From Beyond is good, and it has, like, a lot of, like, stuff that we were talking about, like, with the interdimensional, like, properties of the stories, where they make a machine that sort of sends out a vibration that causes the things from other dimensions to be able to be seen, but those things can also see you.
But it's the same.
That's what happens in the story.
It's the same concept. Like I said, it's the It's the guy who, it's the sort of, you know, Frankenstein thing. It's the guy who wants to know stuff, and he doesn't realize that there, you know, he doesn't know he's going too far.
Right.
He just doesn't understand, like, the restraint. He wants to know more. He wants to find things out, and he always winds up going too far, and then it comes back to get you.
But, you know, there's a lot of...
I mean, that's another big, you know, that's a big part of what sort of Lovecraft's always... I wouldn't necessarily say he's always warning you about, but that's a really common theme.
Well, there's the scientist that is seeking knowledge, and in doing so finds that, you know, the knowledge he's seeking is far too terrible to know.
I think he wants to make the point that it's just so.
He's looking for reason in chaos, well, and he finds that the chaos is too far beyond reason to understand.
I think Lovecraft. That's one of Lovecraft's ways of making the point that all of the things that encompass this so-called mythos, all those things are so far beyond us that, like, there's nothing good that comes from it. Like, even people with the best of intentions, you know.
Right.
That you know, have any sort of contact with it are ultimately destroyed.
Well, in so much as that there's a...
But I think that sort of aspect, that's his way of just constantly reinforcing the fact that it's so far beyond the comprehension of simple mortal humans.
Right. Well, any other comments, people? Does anybody have anything else they want to add to that?
On that cheery note.
Go buy a book and read it.
Yes, absolutely. If you get anything from this show, it's, you know, if you haven't read the Lovecraft
Penguin's
stories,
got them all.
If you've only
has
had,
all this stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of Penguin classics. You know, you can go to your bookstore. If you ask for Lovecraft, the people working at your neighborhood Borders or your, you know, whatever store
the,
you go to.
People at Borders don't know anything.
Well, if they can look it up on a computer, they'll be able to tell you. You walk in there and you say Lovecraft, they're probably going to know what you're talking about. They're
going to send you to the sex section.
It's the best horror of the 20th century, and I can tell you that without a question. I mean, there's
so many.
You're going
to end up with a Kama Sutra.
You'll find, if you haven't read the stories, you're just going to find, right, the Kama Sutra. Yeah, or no, what you need to get if you want a real horror show is the 70s version of The Joy of Sex, where everybody's super hairy. Yeah, because that was some hard shit, man. When I was growing up, that was my version of porn.
That probably explains more than a few things.
But, okay.
You've seen you like them fuzzy.
Hair soup.
I like the hairy girls.
Hair suit.
I like the hairy girls.
A hair suit. Anyway. Well, see, we had to go off topic at some point. Oh,
yeah, there we went.
You can't have an episode.
Oh, boy.
Oh. Man, we almost made it through an episode without getting off topic.
Well, I thought, okay, yeah, I got to, you know.
We're talking about hairy
armpit girls that, yeah. Because, you know, in those...
Well, he can have hairy other parts on girls, too.
Live the dimensions of the...
Any port
of the hounds, dude, you know. That's why shaving that stuff's so important. But, but I thought I'd end the show by butchering the hell out of the great, like, Cthulhu...
why don't you just translate it?
No, man. I got to do it. Cause
just
it's
go
really
like this.
Funny. No,
that's how he describes it.
No, because it's a...
Guttural cocking.
Because this is what the cult chants, and they never really do it very well. If anything, if you can manage to get Call of Cthulhu on books on tape, the guy that does this, man, you can tell he's just like, oh, my God. There is. I have it. Yeah, it's really good, too. But it's... it's just the phrase that they chant over and over again, and I thought I'd butcher it up at the end of the show, so here goes. Funguli Mugul Naf Cthulhu Rilye Waganagle Ftan.
I'll drink
drinking. That's applause worthy, dude.
Yeah.
That was right.
Yeah.
It's all phonics, dude. It's phonics.
Except with the
It's hooked on.
There's like no vowels in the whole sentence.
There's lots of apostrophes.
It's hooked on time.
And there's lots of apostrophes.
There's a bunch of
But there's no rock dots.
No, there's no rock dots.
No umlauts.
So it makes it really hard to know.
There's
where
umlauts
and
unausprichlich
and
Kulten.
Inflections in it, but it's what it translates out to is, in his house at Rielje, dead Cthulhu waits dreaming. Which, of course, you're like, what?
You know? Dead and asleep at the same time.
Yeah, he's dead, but he's asleep. He died in his sleep. Did he? Obviously, you're going to have to answer
strange eons, even death may die.
So if you feel compelled to go out there and... if you feel compelled to go out there and investigate for yourself, just realize that there's been people there before you that have...
And they're all either dead or crazy.
Yep. So it would be better for you to take some online courses at Miskatonic University. They offer online courses now.
Because you don't want to
go up in the stacks and borrow the copy of the Necronomicon that they
you
have.
You can't borrow
there.
It. You've got
to
read
no,
it
there. No, it's a reference book, so you can't check it out. They're not about that, so, yeah.
You got to scribble down some notes from it.
Because we didn't talk too much about, like, Miskatonic. Miskatonic U, man. Home of the fighting cephalopods. Go pods! It's a wonderful school, and, you know.
We can put PDFs on the website where they can just fill it out and have their own degree. They want.
We're running out of web space, actually. So
fake degree from the fake.
So this will very soon. I'm unfortunately going to have to start taking the first couple of episodes out of the feed. So if you're interested in getting an episode, if you're catching this episode once I've already done this and you really want to get a hold of like one of the earlier episodes but you can't, email us at destructomundo@gmail.com and we'll be happy to figure out a way to get it to you.
Otherwise, you'll have to wait for the 20th anniversary box set.
Yes, and you know, that stuff doesn't come cheap, fellas. So,
isn't that when we're going to officially re-release the Lost episode?
Yeah. The flashlight.
I've got
nerd
bootlegs for
episode.
Sale.
Episode zero with the flashlight rant, as it's become known.
Right.
It's really not much of a rant. It's more of
Mark
a,
said something.
It's more
about
of a.
That
it's more of a.
Night. Mark's going to be a special guest bartender.
It's
Mark.
Really more of a discourse than a rant.
Well, man. He was asking, man, why don't y'all put back up the fire? You know, the flashlights episode, and I'm like, oh man,
come on, let's go.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. But anyways, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you have just anything you want to say at all, if you want to congratulate Ted on his spawn, you can email us at
She has a Cthulhu plush. Yeah.
Yeah, because Ted breeded.
Brooded. You're on a roll. You're on a roll. Ted always broods. Ted broods. It's what he does.
I brew and I brood.
Well, what would it be?
Breeded.
Bread.
Ted Bread.
Ted Bread. Okay.
There you go.
Ted Bread.
But not breaded.
Don't like it's your native language or anything.
If he breaded his brood.
I'm using the old English. The doth have breaded.
I mean, he like put some eggs on his baby and put breadcrumbs on it.
But, yeah.
It's only prior to cooking.
Well, if you just want to congratulate Ted or not. Or not. Or whatever you decide to do, emails. Let us know what you think.
Send us pictures.
Yeah, or stuff.
Hot girls. Especially if you are a hot girl.
That's your request, right? Send pictures of hot girls.
Because we know we're all in the podcasting for the teenage tang.
Okay.
The end.
Yeah.
Okay, well, from Destructomundo, this is James.
Want Adam.
Dead.
Whatever.
Good night.
I thought about staying. They offered me the chance to lead them, to teach them to be king.
Uh-huh.
But my place is here, so I swallowed the juice, said the words, and here I am.
Did you say the words right this time?
Well, maybe I didn't say every single tiny little syllable, no, but basically I said them, yeah. Basically.
You know that story about how you could have been king? I think it's kind of cute.
Yeah. Lady, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave the store.
Who the hell are you?
Name's Ash. Housewares. Get some. Sure, I could have stayed in the past. Could have even been king. But in my own way, I am king. Hail to the king, baby.